Don't kid yourself. Almost any time Jim is jamming out, he throws some ABBA in there, okay? He loves that shit.
In a world where you only have trailers and posters to judge a movie, Jim and Ted strike out to answer the age-old question, will you see it?
Hey, Ted, it's episode 79, and you made me wait a few nights for my favorite night of the week.
That's right.
Yeah, man.
I apologize. We had a packed weekend.
Yeah, I know. So here we are Monday night. I had to wait to talk to you. Jeepers.
Lots happening right now. So yes.
Yeah.
How was your week?
Week was good. Watched a bunch of stuff. A lot of training. I'm coming down to the wire for the Tahoe Trail 100 mountain bike race.
Oh.
So trying to dial in some last minute training things, but you know, that's getting, my legs are pretty hurting right now, but I'm going to start in recovery mode. Start winding down and tapering to race day. And then a bunch of watching stuff. So how about you?
Same here. I'm not racing. When's the Tahoe 100?
July 13th. So there's going to be July a couple 13th. Weeks mid-July. We're going to probably replay some of our favorite interviews.
Cool. Sounds good.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I also have been doing a new workout. So that's, I have an aching body as well.
Oh, what are you up to?
Oh, it's like HIIT.
High intensity interval training.
That's right.
Yeah.
And then also like, it's modified yoga. Maybe it's Pilates. I don't even know. It's like a mix. It's like a mutt of a workout.
So like you're in the backyard, you run from fence line to fence line, touch the fence, run back, touch the fence, run back, touch.
Yeah, a lot of stretching that you don't, it doesn't, it's like, oh, this is nothing. And then half an hour later, you're in a ball on the floor and you're like crying.
Yeah. Well, let's start crying with a beer. So I have a tear in my beer and then we could talk more about your hit.
There you go.
All right. How about I pull it off this week first?
Let's see it.
All right. So we have Penguin Rhinos. So this is Made West Brewing Company and Fieldwork Brewing Company, short-lived. So it's a like collaboration type beer. 7% IPA, and you know it's a 16-ouncer, so one pint. And this is the last of the number one fan, Paul Pasternak.
Paul, that's right.
I don't know, cellar beer, I guess. Yeah, so let me see here. It's a can. Last one's a can. White. Oh, boy, I can't even get my nails under it. There we go.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Let's see. I'm curious what this is like, because other than it's saying IPA and 7%. I don't know what to expect.
Well, you expect penguin rhinos, of course.
What do they taste like?
The body of a penguin, the head of a rhino.
Oh, this smells good. I'll let the head go down. This smells good. So what do you have today? Oh, wait a minute. I got an eyelash that fell in there. Okay, here we go. Let's see.
That's not good brew.
Oh, grapefruity. Wow.
Grapefruit?
Here, Cloris, taste it. Serious grapefruit. Yeah.
Citrus.
Citrusy, yeah. No, it's good. It's good. It's smooth, but definitely grapefruit. Yeah, very sweet on the front, not too bitter on the back.
So my sister-in-law and brother-in-law.
Okay.
And then my other brother-in-law were here, well, my other brother-in-law is visiting from back east, and they all went to Disneyland together on Saturday, part of our thing, and part of our weekend. And they were out, and they saw this beer, and they're like, ooh, maybe Ted can drink this beer on air and talk about, you know, Aisha and Suresh and Aziz. So
wait, who are these people?
They're my the couple, Aisha and Suresh, are my brother-in-law and sister-in-law.
And you're struggling with their names?
Cut all that out, man.
No.
Make me sound good.
Come on, I can't. I gotta keep that in. That's amazing.
So you've met him once.
Yeah, I did meet him
once. Yes, you met him once. Yeah. And then Aziz is visiting us from back east, and they were out together, and they saw this mango veza, cerveza. So mango veza.
Man, you're like struggling tonight with. Expedition.
It's a Latitude 33, unparalleled craft Latitude 33, and it's a tropical mango IPA.
Is it made in LA?
It is. Let's see. I think Latitude 33 is LA. I don't know where this is.
Because LA is like latitude 33, I think, right?
Is it?
Isn't that LA's latitude?
Maybe.
Yeah. So what's the style? Is it an IPA?
It's an IPA. It says in tribute to our southern neighbors, so it's got to be California or something along those lines.
Yeah.
We crafted an unparalleled contrast of sweet and heat with mango vesa.
Can I ask what?
Yeah.
What's your can like? Because this can. So last week we oh, you have a bottle. Okay.
It's a bottle, and it's a big one. It's a 22 ouncer.
Oh, there, you're gonna have fun tonight.
So, and I beat you by 2.2%. 7.2 ABV.
Oh yeah, you win. You win. Mine is 7 even.
And it says it mixes fruity bitterness up front, followed by a burst of habanero warmth.
Yeah, mine doesn't poison the IPA. Well, and tell me what it's supposed to taste like.
All right, here we go.
Go for it. Oh, yeah. Sounds yummy. So last week we talked about the cans and the sticker labels and all that stuff. This week, my can has like a heat wrap or a heat shrink wrap.
Oh, really? Label.
Like they put it around and it was like someone went by with like a hair dryer. And boom, there you go. It sucks to it.
So you got a shrinky dink.
A shrinky dink. That's, I was trying to remember the name, man. Oh, you beat me there. I love that. I love that.
I can't pronounce the name of this beer, but I remember Shrinky Dinks.
That's right. That's right. You know what's crazy, though, man? I was looking through, like, just the shows we did through iTunes. I was looking at the old, you know, like, you know how you could click on, like, what you've recently downloaded and, like, the whole library?
Right.
And like, in a weird, bizarre sort of way, I'm looking at stuff. I'm like, man, 6 months ago, 8 months ago, and it seems like it was yesterday. And what got me thinking that is a lot of the stuff is now being released to the theater and everything. And it's like,
yeah,
man, it's like we live so far in the future.
We live in the future.
That's right. So, but the only problem is my crystal ball is broken. You know, it doesn't work. And the parts for my time machine, they're still in the future.
That's right. You gotta get to the future first.
I know, to fix it. And then what's the point? I'm already there. Yeah. So what have you been watching this week?
Well, on your recommendation, I watched
The Dawn Wall.
See, look, I'm blanking on everything. I'm blanking on everything. I watched The Dawn Wall.
Yeah.
And I will say it was amazing.
Oh, I thought it was good too.
I think it was twice as good as Free Solo.
Twice as good.
I mean, it had like, you know, I gave the trailer a little bit of, you know, a little bit of flack for giving too much away.
Yeah, yeah.
But it really, it had there were so many twists and turns in the story that it gave stuff away, but they didn't go into the finger like we thought they did.
Yeah.
They might have briefly mentioned it, but they didn't give it away the way that, you know, the way that it was. And then they didn't give away a lot of like the trials and tribulations on getting across that big lateral move, you know?
Oh yeah. As far as, well, the one dude, he wasn't about to go climb down and around. And he's just like, I'm just going forward or else. But what I thought was cool though is that, what was his name? Caldwell?
Yeah.
He's like, dude, like until you do it, like I'm here with you and we'll just hang out and wait. I'll wait for your fingers to heal.
No.
I'll wait for, you know, like just a good, genuine friend. Where I think the other dude, I think he would have just been like, dude, I got to go climb, man. Screw you. Like I can see the Free Solo. Now I'm just blanking on their names, but but I could see him just being like, yeah, whatever, I'm out of here, and like leaving his buddy behind. But I think Johnny Caldwell or something.
Tommy
Caldwell. That's what it was. I could see him, or well, not I could see him, but he was really genuine in how he hung with his buddy and said, dude, you know. And I love too how his friend calls him up, like, well, not even his friend yet, and he calls him and he's like, hey, I see you want to do this climb, you need help? And he's like, yeah, come on, we'll climb. And then like they live on the wall for like 6 years. Oh. Like, what? How does that even happen?
No, but and my crazy thing is like Kevin, I forget his, the guy who called him.
Jorgensen?
Call Tommy. Kevin Jorgensen.
Jorgensen, yeah.
So Kevin Jorgensen, he does bouldering. Like he's the number one boulder guy that climbs on, you know, 20, 30 foot boulders.
Right.
How do you go from a 20 to 30 foot boulder to El Capitan?
Right, right. Like plotting a new route, you know? Yeah, I mean, like, I know. He's, like, 10 feet off the ground, you know? Like, I remember going bouldering, like, and I can't make the, like, I can't solve the problem because they call them problems, right? I can't.
Yes, yeah.
And then all I do, I'm like, oh, okay, I just step off and,
just
like.
Jump down.
Not even jump half the time. Sometimes I just put my foot down and I'm right there, you know? Like,
yeah.
I know, it's so amazing. Hilarious. Anything else you've been watching?
Yeah, I saw tons of stuff. I saw Toy Story 4.
Ah, how's Sporky?
Sporky is amazing. So I have two tribute titles to Toy Story 4. Saving Private Forky is one of them.
Oh, nice.
And Toy Story Endgame.
Wait, now, who made those? Is that from the movie or is that what you're making up?
I'm just making them up.
Oh, okay.
Because, you know.
So wait, Saving Private Sporky.
Saving Private Sporky.
And what's the other
because
one?
Because... The same private Sporky, and then the other one is Toy Story Endgame.
Toy Story Endgame, okay. Yeah.
And both of them have to do with Woody's character. It's, you know, it's Woody's movie. And he gives his all, and he's always been so giving through all these movies. He's a loyal toy to the end. And, you know, there's a lot of beautiful moments where he both gives more of himself than you would ever imagine, and then also is allowed to have some pleasure, you know, of his own, you know, to do what he wants to do rather than what he feels like his duty calls him to do. So
yeah,
it's really kind of amazing. And I thought it's an adult movie. It's a movie for adults that kids will have a good time watching.
Oh, wow. Okay. Sounds interesting.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to checking it out because I know the boys for a while were into Toy Story. And then Toy Story 2 and 3, they kind of were like, you know, they weren't really into it. Scared them, you know, and then they kind of never went back. But maybe I could convince them to go back and then we could see Toy Story 4.
There's some scary dummies in here. There's like the old ventriloquist dummies.
Oh, nice.
They're kind of creepy, so
yeah.
There's a lot of creepy old antique store stuff, but it's an amazing, amazing film.
Yeah, cool. And then, so, like a Charlie McCarthy kind of a dummy, you mean? Or what do you mean, like, antique dummies?
Like a vaudeville?
Yeah, like the Charlie McCarthy ones.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know Charlie McCarthy, but yes.
Though. Okay. He's like the way old, like, where's the bow tie and the tuxedo kind of. Yeah.
Okay, cool. Then that's it. How about you? What have you been watching?
About halfway through Wild Wild Country.
Okay.
Yeah, you turned me onto that, and well, I knew about it, but you got me motivated to watch it. And
did you watch Batshit Valley, or are you going to do that after?
No, so you're beating me to the punch a little bit.
Sorry.
So Wild Wild Country is like 5 or 6 episodes. I don't remember exactly, but I finished 3 episodes and not quite to the end, but like we're over the hump.
Uh-huh.
Well, Clarissa hasn't seen it, but I'm over the hump.
Uh-huh.
And it is Batshit Valley for sure. I mean, it is ridiculous. you haven't seen it, have you?
I saw the first episode and I have not been able to go back.
Okay. Yeah, it's pretty, like, you know, you have the guru guy, and I mean, well, you kind of get the idea.
I saw the first one, and, you know, it was enough for me after seeing Batshit Valley that I still want to see the rest of it to see if there's an FBI angle and how much of the FBI angle is, you know, fabricated and how much is there a real conspiracy with the FBI.
Yeah, and, you know, for where I'm at in it, I mean, the FBI really hasn't even come into play yet.
Right.
You know, so they kind of said, like, these are the people. The second one was them moving in. The third one's like the conflict, and now I'm like the FBI is not there yet, you know, but they poke their head in and out like a minute here, a minute there, but like really they haven't been involved. But anyway, let's move on. We did see about 5 episodes of Documentary Now.
Uh-huh. Did you like it?
It's some of them are pretty funny. And some are like just so bizarre. And we just started with the first one. We're just going to roll through.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, and the funny thing is, so when they do the first one, and I'm in blind, right? I don't know anything about the show. I don't know who's a part of it or any of this stuff.
Right.
And they have the mom and daughter in like the, I don't know, what would you call it? Like the hoarding house or something? Or?
Yeah, the dilapidated.
Yeah, the dilapidated.
Overgrown house.
Yeah. And I'm sitting there, and I said to Clarissa, I'm like, is that Bill Hader? Like, you know, it was so like just bizarre, you know? And
yeah.
And what's her name? Miriam, the woman who opens it.
Oh, yeah. Helen Mirren.
That's it. Yeah. And she's like, it's episode or it's season 50. For the past 50 years of the golden age of documentary now. And she's just totally stone faced. I mean, it's pretty funny.
And the whole intro has all that old footage of the 30 documentary now logos that have passed, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And then we watched 27-10-15 hike to Paris.
Oh, yeah. You did see that?
What is it? The 15-17 to Paris?
15-18?
15-17 to Paris.
15-17.
Yeah. Paris. You won't like it, though.
Why?
Directed by Clint Eastwood.
But he's not in it, right?
No, he's not in it.
Okay.
I have a few comments about it. I mean, I think the main thing is there was a story to be told and they checked a box. Boom, told the story.
Okay.
Right? Did you see it or no?
I did not see it.
Okay. Pretty much, like I said, you know, there's a story there. These dudes, like, saved the train from a shootout.
Mm-hmm.
True heroes. I mean, like, you can't take that from them, period. But again, they told the story. They checked the box. Story told. Enough said. The guys played themselves, which I think you knew.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think the coolest part of that, when they showed the awards ceremony at the end in France, when they were getting like the French Legion Award or whatever it was, you know, they got like the top honors for the from the French.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like the thing that was awesome is it's spliced in perfect because the guys are playing themselves and they just put that footage in there. But here's where I think this is one section, I think, or not one section, but one part of the movie I think that was pretty ridiculous. So what they do is the kids are like in elementary school. So Jenna Fischer and Judy Greer play the moms, right, of two of the kids.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're in and out of the schools and they have problems with schools and all this stuff. And they're like whatever they look like when the kids are, I don't know, 12, whatever. Now these guys are in their 20s or something, going into the military and, you know, they're traveling and they do their thing. And as they revisit the parents at the end, they look exactly the same. Like they don't age.
Oh.
The moms, like, at all, you know, like, mm-hmm. And the guys look like they could just date their moms because like everybody's like the same age, right? You know, so it's like Jenna Fischer, for example, when she's the mom of the 12-year-old, makes perfect sense. She could easily be a mom of a 12-year-old.
Yeah, totally.
But like the mom of a 25-year-old or something, I mean.
But they didn't put a wig on her.
They didn't do anything.
They didn't draw like crow's feet on her eyes or something.
It was like the same outfit.
Same thing.
Yeah. So I thought that was
Clint is slipping. He's it's fine. I made this joke earlier and don't get me wrong. I just don't want to make our audience have to go dig up the episode where we talked about this trailer, but it's almost like,
right. Is it the mule?
No. We did this trailer early on, I think.
Oh yeah. We did do this one. I thought you meant a Clint Eastwood trailer. Well, this is a Clint Eastwood trailer. What am I saying?
No. This is, how's that beer hitting you?
Yeah, love it.
So the thing about having the characters play themselves in this movie is kind of crazy because it's like Clint Eastwood could just completely phone in his whole directing thing. You know, like you do a scene in the train and they're doing their action in the train and they're taking out the gunman. And then, you know, Clint Eastwood calls cut and he walks up to the guys and he goes, so is that how you did it? And they're like, that's how we did it. And he goes, cut, we have a, that's, you know, right, on to the next shot, you know. So it's literally, if you're saying that he phoned it in by not doing anything with the mothers, then maybe this is the same thing.
Well, and then the other, and then the last comment I want to make, and I don't mean any disrespect at all, but the guys play themselves, right?
Yeah.
And I mean, obviously, if I was playing myself, I would probably be awful at acting me. But these guys were like not very, you, like you could tell they weren't like actors by trade.
They weren't comfortable.
Yeah, like even though they're playing themselves, there were a few times when you could tell like they were in the mood or in the moment, like when they were doing what actually went down.
Right.
And it was like, okay, they're just there. You know what I mean? But there were times when like they're talking to a girl because like the guy's, you know, visiting the girl from, you know, in Germany and stuff,
yeah,
that he knew. And like, you could tell it was like super awkward, like as if like, well, this isn't really the girl and I'm supposed to pretend like she's really the girl, but the acting, you get the idea. Yeah. And then the last thing I'll say is Infinity War. We watched Infinity War. Yeah. So we have Ant-Man and the Wasp to go.
And then Endgame.
And then Endgame, yeah.
Oh, then no, Captain Marvel, then Endgame.
Yeah, but is Captain Marvel part of the MCU?
Yeah.
Oh, I have Captain Marvel?
You have Captain Marvel in the middle there.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that was part of it.
That's part of it. You gotta see all of it.
Oh man.
you got three to go.
Oh geez. Here, I thought I was almost done.
Oh, but do you like Ant-Man and the Wasp?
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, and that's what I was going to say. One thing I noticed about this, though, so, like, they have Thanos, and they have, like, you know, I mean, battles beyond battles, right?
Yes.
The thing about, like, Marvel that I've come to figure is when you have, like, origin stories or you have stories about, like, one-off characters and things, like, they tend to be, like, you know, smaller, less explosions, you know, it's and so on, right?
Yes.
When you bring in the whole crew, the whole world's exploding.
Well, they have to have a reason to get the crew together,
I guess. Know? And a few weeks ago, maybe a month ago, I shared with you Skeptic's Guide to the Universe. They talked about how Thanos wants to wipe out 50% of the population and stuff.
Yes, I listened to that episode.
You did? Okay, I was going to ask you about that.
I did.
So what are your thoughts? Like, wiping out 50% is really, like, meaningless because people are just going to breed and bring it all back.
They're going to breed, bring it all back, and then, yeah. And then the whole idea of, like, if you wipe out 50% of all life, that you'd actually take out microbes that you need for, you know, and to me, it's like, it's their job. They're the Skeptic's Guide to the Universe.
They totally nerded out on it, of course.
But they nerded out so much that I was like, oh, it's not enjoyable to me.
Like, yeah, like you just destroyed the entire movie.
I was almost like, I get it. I get your myth busting and all that kind of stuff. But it was just like, it's a movie. So to me, the thing about any kind of convention, any kind of logical puzzles that you put into a movie kind of belays the facts of the reasons behind the filmmaker's goals with the movie. Like, your goal in a movie, like, I actually thought about that when I was watching Toy Story 4. Like, I was thinking of how believable these characters are and how, you know, justified you are in feeling these emotions for these characters. But then I kept thinking, then I snapped myself out of it and I said, like, but they're toys and they're walking around.
Right, exactly.
Because it was the one thing about Bo Peep. Bo Peep's a lamp, right? So Bo Peep is on, you know, a porcelain doll on a lamp. And, you know, like, the fact that she can move around is completely illogical. Like, she's porcelain.
Exactly.
And she's glued to a lamp. Like, that's not a toy, you know? So I was talking to Audrey this morning and I was like, they're really kind of jumping the shark by having all of this. And then I was like, but wait, that's not the point of the movie. The point of the movie is these emotions, you know, making you identify with emotions and aspects of these characters and then taking you for a ride. So I think that's where, you know, exercises like that Skeptic Guides to the Universe, you know, what would happen if you took out 50% of the universe or 50% of the life on Earth.
Yeah, right.
I understand why they do it because it's fun and it has its own endeavor unto itself, but it didn't diminish the movie for me. It just went to a ridiculous end.
Well, and yeah, exactly. I don't think it's meant to stop fans from being fans. I think it's just like a fun conversation piece, among a bunch of nerds.
Yes.
Right?
I will say that I love their way of gauging the audience's buy-in on things.
Okay.
When they do the single clap. To me, the single clap, it's like, it's such a better way to gauge, you know, the audience's meter on how much they're into something.
Right, right.
So it's actually like, to me, that was the biggest thing I took away from the episode was like in a live performance, when you have somebody say a single clap for this answer, a single clap for that answer, like I could actually discern the audience's actual choice. You know,
how loud is the clap?
Well, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Like, it doesn't matter. Yeah. How loud is the clap? The single clap of the crowd at the one moment.
Yeah, so that was pretty funny. It was fun. That was pretty funny. Yeah. So anyway, yeah. So Infinity War. I mean, the other thing that I think is unsettling with it, though, is if you think about movies or even TV shows do this, you know, I guess, but TV shows are coming back in a week or something, if you know, like episode wise. But when you think about like a 3-act movie, right? The second act essentially is when the hero is at his lowest point. And then, or even sometimes there's 4 acts, but I mean, like when you think about the 3rd act, that's kind of the rebound, and now they're gonna like kick ass and take names or whatever. Obviously, I haven't seen Endgame, but Infinity War, and I love how the one guy was like ribbing on you for calling Infinity Wars. That was hilarious, but
I still see that comment when I log on.
Oh, I love it. I love it. But yeah, so it's like the movie ended at the end of the 2nd act, you know, and there you are, like they're down in their luck, more than down in their luck. I mean, everybody's lost. And as far as you know, Thanos wins because he has all the stones and he has the iron fist, whatever that thing is.
The gauntlet.
The gauntlet, yeah. So I think that's a pretty cool way to end it because, like, for one, you know another movie's coming.
Right, right.
And for two, it leaves you so unsettled that if you saw, I didn't see it in the theater, but if you saw it in the theater, the drive home would be so awkward with the people in the car with you that you would be like, dude, I don't know if I could sleep tonight. This is so weird, you know, like Thanos, like he's ruling, you know, and all that.
Well, I mean, that's one way to look at it. It's the end of the 2nd act, right? I like that angle.
Yeah.
But here's another angle that some people were saying. What if you took this and you said it was actually Thanos' origin story, and the main character of Infinity War is Thanos, and the ending of this story is Thanos winning as the hero of the story?
Okay.
So the end is Thanos accomplishing his goal like any main character would at the end of their movie, their story.
Killing off 50%.
Right. But he does the snap, and that was his goal the whole time. And throughout the whole movie, all the Avengers are trying to do what's right, but they're kind of succumbing to their human sides. They're succumbing to the unprofessionalism of what they're doing. And Thanos is the only one with enough resolve to follow through with every single thing that he needs to do. You know, he kills his daughter. You know what I mean? Which is, it is tragic to him that to kill Gamora, but he has to do it to accomplish his mission, his goal.
So in other words, to save everyone, he has to kill half of them.
He's basically an alien living with PTSD from starvation and famine, from overpopulation destroying his planet.
Right. So his solution is, I don't want my people, or I don't want people to have to starve and die. So rather than that, he's going to do what needs to be done. I'll look at it this way. Deer don't have natural predators like wolves, let's say, anymore.
Right.
So deer are out eating all the foliage in the forest.
Right.
There are so many deer that they ate all the foliage. Now, instead of and let's say you ban hunting. So because there's no hunting, the deer ate everything. So now all the food source is gone. Now, like, the whole herd dies off.
Right.
Because they just starved to death.
They starved to death. They overfeed.
Whereas if you open it up to hunting, you can kill, you could take half the herd, let's say, for food, for the hunt. The other half would thrive in the woods, maybe not get killed by, you know, cars, would not have to starve to death because they ate all the foliage and so on. So in other words, the hunter really is Thanos.
Yes. And Thanos was, you know, he was going around doing it in person in the most cruel way, you know, he could think of. And he was like, the gauntlet will actually allow me to do this and reduce the suffering in when I do it, you know?
Yeah. And they just kind of fade away into ashes.
Yes.
Yeah, but somehow, though, they have to come back. I don't know how that's going to work. Because I've seen other trailers.
That's right.
All right, well, we're not here to talk Infinity War. We're here to talk Angry Birds Movie 2. So, Ted.
Yes.
I ask you, you know what the question is.
Do we need another Angry Birds movie?
Really? Okay, so you have a fun 20-minute app on your cell phone from like 10 years ago.
Yeah.
A second movie a decade later? I mean, come on, who is this for?
I don't know. It's for Sony, I guess.
I'll tell you, though, they put a lineup to it, you know, and we mentioned them earlier. Bill Hader's in this, too.
Yeah, no, they got some star power, you know. It looks fun. It looks like it has appeal. It has humor in it, you know. I don't know. It's kind of a fun, it feels almost retro now, which is strange.
It does a little bit, yeah.
But it's still, I don't know. I'm interested to see if it has the appeal that the first one did and what kind of following this has.
What do you think of the title? The Angry Birds Movie 2.
Yeah, I mean, it's not groundbreaking or anything. I don't think anything about this is truly groundbreaking. I think it seems funny and humorous, and I would, you know, I'd watch part of this. I'd watch this with the kids, you know?
I mean, but why not call it like Angry Birds 2, Frenemies? Or I don't know, just something. I mean, like the title is just awful.
Title by committee,
I guess. I don't know. And then, I mean, they kind of play it out like a huge blockbuster.
They do. They have some star power, like you said, you know. It's got a lot of stuff in it.
Not only do we have the bring back of Angry Birds, but we also have a bring back of the trailer to the trailer. We haven't seen that for a while.
I saw some awful trailers to the trailers this week, but I chose this one. It wasn't too bad.
Yeah.
But yes, the trailer is, you know, a staple for this. I think you had to differentiate this from other Angry Bird videos you see online, so.
Yeah, and I think with something like this, you almost have to, because people are going to be like, Angry Birds, yeah, whatever, click off. You know, they're not going to stick around just because, like you said, I mean, it seems retro or something. But then all of a sudden they're like, whoa, that 3 seconds caught my interest. I'll stick around, you know? So I think in this way, Angry Birds requires a trailer to the trailer.
I agree. I think, you know, there's, like I said, it's not that bad. It is justified, I guess you would say. And I like it.
And then I guess my last comment with it, I'm pretty clueless as to like whatever is going on in this thing. Does it require you saw the first one to kind of figure out what's going on in this one?
I don't think so. Have you played the game at all?
I played the game like 10 years ago.
So there you go. I think that's all you need.
That's all you need. Okay.
I think you need to have played the game once, you know, at least 10 years ago.
You know, shoot a bird at pigs and that's all you need.
Exactly.
Right. And then you have Angry Birds 2, Frenemies.
I will say Jason Sudeikis is winning in life.
And how so?
He plays Red, and he's engaged to Olivia Wilde.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, lucky him. Yeah.
Speaking of which, I saw a ton of stuff, but I didn't give you the full gamut of everything because, you know, I want to share. But I saw Tron Legacy with the kids.
Okay.
Which has Olivia Wilde in it.
Yeah.
We tried to watch the original Tron.
2010.
We rented both of them. We rented Tron and then Tron Legacy.
I love Tron Legacy.
And we couldn't get into Tron. Like, Tron was too old, and it kind of starts you in the middle and it doesn't really explain anything to you. And within 10 minutes, we turned it off.
You know what's funny, though? So when Tron Legacy came out, I remember I watched it and I'm like, I got to go back and watch Tron, because I was a fan of Tron.
Yeah.
And I had like the Intellivision Tron and, you know, I play, you know, the video games and stuff.
Yeah.
But anyway, I'll have to say, though, man, it was... I didn't turn it off after 10 minutes. I did watch it.
It pales in comparison.
It was rough.
It's rough, yeah.
And you're talking Tron Legacy is a decade old.
And even Tron Legacy, like the facial tracking that they used for Jeff Bridges, it's kind of dated, you know? But we were able to put that aside and kind of deal with the uncanny valley that we have a little bit from seeing...
You're talking about how young he looked.
Yeah, for Clue, when you saw Clue.
Yeah.
You know, that's a young... young Bridges, and it's like it looks like a mask because it's a digital mask, basically.
Exactly.
And when you see Thanos, like Thanos has the exact same he has like the ping pong balls, the dots on his face, but he's wearing a head rack with cameras like pointed at his face for all the tracking. So they do the same thing. They do a similar activity. They do a similar camera trick with Thanos's face that they did with Clue, but the technology. He's just advanced by a decade, you know?
Oh, man. And, you know, and part of it, too, like, so Apple comes out. I don't know if you saw, they have the new Mac Pros.
Yeah.
And, like, they were talking about, like, you know, I don't know the specs of it, but, like, the specs are, like, ridiculous. I think I was reading somewhere they were saying, like, if the whole thing is maxed, like, maxed RAM, maxed computing, yeah. You know, cores, all that stuff, you know, it's something like $32,000, right?
Yeah. But it'll run like 16 8K projectors at the same time.
But I mean, think about this, though. You'd look at like just even 5 years ago, a $32,000 computer, let's just say, I mean, couldn't do like what my iMac now does or something, you know? And now you're, it's Moore's Law, right? So it mm-hmm, everything mm-hmm. gets just advanced so much. So you look at that computer. I mean, my opinion is when that thing's released, you're looking at like probably a year, you know, because you're looking at production, movie production and stuff. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. In a year, the CGI in movies is going to be just exponentially increased.
Yeah.
Like to the point you're not going to notice a difference because that thing can crunch numbers. Like, I mean, it's going to be unbelievable.
But, you know, I will say that the obviously Jeff Bezos got in the best business out there because he has AWS and he has all like all this cloud storage.
Oh, that yeah.
Everybody needs.
Right.
And basically it's on the back end of all these proprietary, you know, all these enterprise systems that are the basic DAMs and MAMs of computer world. So DAM is a digital asset manager.
Yeah, right.
So when we put up our 4K video in the cloud, it has to go to a company that we've hired out to do that. And then on the back end of that company, they've rented space on AWS servers. That is going to just skyrocket all that space. You know, all this amazing footage is going to need somewhere to go live. So that's a great business. And then on the flip side of that, if you can do this stuff without rendering, like right now you have render farms, you have computers that are dedicated to rendering video. Like doing the actual
exactly,
you know, and then this stuff live renders, so you can do computer effects, generated effects, and have it just
in real time.
Yeah.
Oh,
it's amazing.
Yeah. I mean, and obviously, you know, I mean, when we think about computers and stuff, you know, you can always say, oh my God, it's so amazing. It's like it obviously, like, it's always better than it's ever been, you know, but this truly could be like the opening of just because of the amount of just raw horsepower you're throwing at it. Right.
Exactly. Yeah.
And that's really what it boils down to.
And if any vendor ever tells me that they have these machines, then I'm going to expect a better rate for how long they're going to take to render stuff.
Yeah. They'll be like, oh yeah, we bought 10 of these. I'll get it to you in 6 months. You're like, oh hell no. You got 2 weeks, buddy. You got 2 weeks. I know what you have.
Some might say that computer is greater than the last
one. That was a cheesy argument. All right, Stranger Things 3. Why do you think the third... I mean, I get it, third season 3, but again, the title. I mean, Stranger Things 3.
They don't have to think about the title. They don't have to do any marketing for this at all. It's just extra. It's just gravy. Everybody that's going to watch this is going to watch it. The thing that this trailer made me want to get out is I wanted to get the box out of storage that has all my Hypercolor t-shirts.
Hypercolor? What do you mean?
Do you didn't have Hypercolor t-shirts when you were a kid?
What's a hypercolor t-shirt?
You don't know what a hypercolor t-shirt is? It's a t-shirt that's like a blue t-shirt, and then you put your hands on it, and then you remove your hands, and where you have the heat from your hands, it has like a different color.
But why would the heat from your chest not make it a different? I don't, what am I missing?
Well, like, I don't, you've never had, you didn't have hypercolor when you were a kid?
I don't think, no. Am I old?
Maybe you're too old for it.
No, but so wait a minute. You're wearing it. Your body is 98.6, but you put your hand over it and then that makes it hotter. Oh, I guess because like there's you're blocking the air temperature on the outside.
Yeah, maybe it's the combination of inside and outside.
Yeah. Huh. Never heard of hypercolor.
That's amazing. You've never heard of hypercolor. But yeah, this is definitely of that time. You know, this is bringing it into the 80s and
yeah.
It's another beautiful retro thing. I think I was feeling a little retro this week, so that's why I picked these two.
Oh, no. Well, yeah, retro for Angry Birds. Strange, but okay. Are you still into Stranger Things?
I am not.
Yeah, so we watched first season, beginning to end, thought it was cool. Second season rolls around. Oh, my God, Stranger Things is here. We got halfway through, and we were just, we looked at, we're kind of like, meh, let's just do something else. Like, we just kind of like lost. And I think it's like, we talk about, and like you've said a number of times, you know, you go through and you talk about, or you look at different series, and it's like they get to the third season, maybe sometimes the fourth season, you know, and you're like, man, like the story's told, you know? And
yeah,
and I could say with certainty, probably the season that we went the longest with in recent memory, I went long with Seinfeld and went long with Big Bang Theory. And yeah. I think Big Bang Theory's still on, but like
it's the last season.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
It has to be. I mean, like, I mean, who even cares at this? It's like, what, 15 seasons or something? It's like, it's got to be, right?
CBS cares. CBS cares. They love that show.
Well, it's made them a lot of money. You know, that show's made them a lot of money. But man, I remember the first years you're watching, you're like, oh my God, this is the best thing ever. But by like season 11, you're like, really? Do I have to keep watching this? And you're so invested, you know?
And what about a Game of Thrones? That too, right?
We're about to get HBO and finish the last season. We, you know, because we were finishing all these Marvels, right. And, you know, we were doing other things. But yeah, we're probably going to be getting that here. Well, hell, we're going to be leaving for Tahoe in a week and a half or a couple weeks.
It'll be end of summer.
And then, yeah, we'll probably do it like mid-August, I'm going to say.
After the Leadville.
Exactly.
Your Leadville hangover. Exactly. You can come back.
I'm too busy, like... You know, doing all my crazy bike rides and stuff. But anyway, Stranger Things, let's get back to it.
Stranger Things. Yes. Yeah, so yeah, the kids are growing up. I wonder about this trailer. Like you said, you petered out in the middle of season two.
Right.
I think I got 3 episodes into season 2 and I did the same thing. This was almost on the brink of bringing me back and trying to watch out season 2.
Yeah. I mean, we might've gotten 4 episodes in or something, you know,
yeah.
But do you notice how the monster sounds like the Predator?
Yeah.
The same sound, the same. And I tell Clarissa that, you know, and so I play both. They're pretty, you know, because I go to YouTube and I find the Predator like sound effects.
Right.
Man, they are just so like, yeah, they're just, it's the
similar.
It's the Predator.
So are you going to watch it? It's on Netflix. It's super easy to watch.
You know, I'm not saying I won't. It's just in the back of the line of all the other things I want to watch. You know, I mean, I got to finish watching The Guru, Wild Wild Country.
Wild Wild Country. You got to finish the rest of Documentary Now.
Documentary Now. Yeah. I'll tell you though, man, that one's pretty funny. That one's pretty funny. I'd say
the fun thing about Documentary Now is that they're all standalone.
Well, and the thing I like about it too is you're watching it and then, you know, like they come, like you said, they're standalone, right? So you watch an episode and, you know, there's Bill Hader and a couple people, whatever. And you're like, okay. And then you watch another episode and then you're like, is that Jack Black? You know? And like, and like, there's just like these random like people appear. And it's clever. It's definitely clever, yeah. You know, how they do it. And I went on, I don't remember what it was. It was like Rotten Tomatoes or something, mm-hmm. But they had a list of the documentary and then, well, the Documentary Now and then the documentary
that they're parodying.
that they're parodying for documentary now, you know, like the inspirational documentary that made that one, whatever.
Yes.
And it's so funny how, and I almost want to watch all of them because it's like, you know, here's your documentary, but now let me go watch what you're like making fun of, essentially.
Yeah. Yeah.
To see how close you are and like what made you pick those, you know, like. Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, even just, and just thinking of the latest crop of great documentaries that are, that come every year, some great documentaries come out, like this whole Free Solo. And like, you know, it almost writes its, you know, parts of it, right. The ideas write themselves.
Well, that's why I said to you the other day, I'm like, I want to see The Minimalists.
The Minimalists.
Right. You're so minimalist. You're just like living in the riverbed.
You're homeless and you're like, oh, I do this by choice. And,
yeah. You know, like, I mean, it's, yeah, you're right. It writes itself, you know?
Or like Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, like that, you know, like, you know, Mr. Rogers, that the great documentary.
Yeah.
Just,
yeah.
You know, any of them, the Three Identical Strangers, there every year there's like a crop of docs that just beg to be parodied.
Or what was the one that was like, there's like the controversy, like Gasland or something.
Oh, yeah.
There's like this controversy whether it was real or not, and the guy made up the statistics and the data. But yeah, I mean, like, I could just picture, like, you know, sitting there talking about like the gas fields, and I don't even know what it was, but but you're right though; these things write themselves. I mean,
and yet they're so well written. So it's like, you know, that's a hit to Seth Meyers, but like him and his writing staff is amazing. They're amazing.
Yeah, just fill in the blanks. That's all you got to do.
Yeah,
it's like ad libs.
Yeah, but Stranger Things 3, I don't know. It's like you have one storyline. You were invested in the characters for a season. You know, they obviously had some kind of drop off in season two, but maybe they took some data and they figured out what works for season three. I don't know.
I mean, you know, the only thing I would say is, like, there's the, what do they call it? The
Demogorgon?
No, the turnaround, or what do they call it? Like the, people are probably yelling at me right now. You know, where you have the world that's the opposite of your world. What was that world?
Oh, yeah.
Whatever it is, where they had like the snowflakes.
Right.
The big snowflakes. So you have that, and it seems like that's come into the real world based on the trailer, and maybe that even happens in the second season. But then, like, is that relevant, essentially, once it gets there, because there's no more mystery? It's just everybody's out in the open.
Mm-hmm.
And then I guess the last part of it is, like, if you think about, like, Netflix, right? Stranger Things 3, it's as if they're making, like, they're moving away from seasons, and rather they're just saying these are all movies that we're doing over a number of, like, episodes.
Yeah, limited series.
Limited series, yeah.
Right.
So it's kind of like, what was that thing back in the day? It was, like, with Patrick Swayze, The North of the South,
oh,
right,
yeah,
in the 80s.
Mini series.
There you go. It's like a mini series.
The Thornbirds.
Right. So you had these mini series in the 80s, and mini series would be like 5-8 episodes, and then it was over. It was a one and done, and they told the story. So it's kind of like, if you think about The Lord of the Rings, and, you know, those are like long 3-hour movies, right?
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
if you take the three of them, you're looking at like, you know, 9 hours.
Right.
But really, that's a mini series over 9 nights or something.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, so that's kind of what these things are, you know, and they're just like, you know, Stranger Things 3. I don't know.
But I think, you know, I think you're onto something. I think anthology series where they don't tell the same story, but they kind of keep the same branding, that kind of has some more stickiness to it. Like, you know, documentaries now is what we're talking about, but also, like, Black Mirror has the same thing where if you're not into one episode.
Well, and that's coming back, too.
Yeah, that's back. I saw one of those last weekend. So, you know,
So, okay, last thought I have. Angry Birds, the Angry Birds movie 2, Stranger Things 3, right? You look at the titles. Are they not investing in titles because, like, you know, I'm making the joke, like, Angry Birds 2, Frenemies, you know? Is it like, because what are they going to do? They're still going to call it Angry Birds 2 regardless of whether or not Frenemies is there.
Right.
Same thing with Stranger Things. You're going to be like, you like Stranger Things? Yeah, which one? 1, 2, or 3? You know, I mean, it doesn't matter what you put. Everyone's just going to say 1, 2, or 3.
Right.
You know, so maybe that's where they are with it. And people are just like, you know, like marketing people and stuff are like, screw it. We're not going to come up with trendy names because nobody cares. It's just Angry Birds 1, 2, or 3.
Yeah, we'll see if there's a third one. It's
gonna be interesting. Oh, my God. I hope not. Yeah, Angry Birds 3, 20 years later. And yeah, I mean, like, really? I'm surprised this one's out, but...
Right.
Anyway, man. Any last thoughts?
So the last thought I have is we had two more things that I watched this weekend.
Oh, go for it, yeah. At
Eternity's Gate, which was the Vincent Van Gogh movie with Willem Dafoe.
Oh, right, right.
Willem Dafoe and...
We covered that one.
Yeah, exactly. It was a really good trailer. Oscar Isaacs plays Gauguin, and the two characters are great. There was a lot of alienating effects in the movie. There's a lot of handheld camera work that just made you a little nauseous.
Kind of like episode of 24. Where they're chasing Jack Bauer around.
Yeah, but I think that's like stylized. And then this is like overly saturated with like shaky camera.
Oh,
like,
I gotcha.
It's like they point the camera at the ground and then they run. They run like while you're looking at Vincent Van Gogh's feet, you know? And it's like, you can't run while looking down at your feet and have a shaky camera. It's just like, there's too much going on, you know?
You want to puke.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Anne was feeling very sick and she didn't know if she could finish. but by the end, she finished the movie and I think I fell asleep, so.
Well, she's the art historian, so she better finish that movie.
I know. She liked it. She was looking up the real works of art the whole time because it was kind of amazing and the real story of how it ended. And
yeah,
apparently there's a new case that's opened whether Vincent Van Gogh shot himself as they said back when he died.
Oh, really?
But he was shot in the stomach and he might have actually been murdered. So that's interesting.
So they open the case. They find out he's murdered, and then what happens? It just rewrites the history books.
It is the coldest of cases, yes. I don't think anyone could be held accountable.
Yeah, like, what do you do? I mean, like, it's over, right?
He died in 1890, so
yeah.
It was quite some time ago. And then the last thing I saw this weekend, on Friday night, Anne and I went to the East-West Players, which is a theater troupe. It's the oldest... you remember that gala that I went to, the East West Players Gala?
Yeah.
For the big Asian American Pacific Islander organization. It's the longest running person of color theater troupe in America. They had a performance of Mamma Mia. So it's a bunch of Asian Pacific Islanders doing Mamma Mia, which is really fun and fun and innovative and fun to watch.
And where's the theater?
The theater's in downtown LA. It's in Little Tokyo.
Oh, okay.
So we Frank and Barbara watched the kids on Friday night, and Anne and I went down and we took in the show.
And how large was the audience? Like a couple hundred or?
Yeah, I think the theater holds probably 150 or something like that. So it's a small little, it's like a brownstone, kind of New York-esque, you know, like a 4 or 5 story brownstone. And Anne and I were in charge of the balcony, so we helped, we were volunteering as well and helping usher people in and stuff. So
here's a funny one. So Clarissa and I, too, have seen Mamma Mia, and we saw it in Chicago when we were visiting, you know, my parents and stuff one time.
Uh-huh.
And the theater that is in is known as the Oriental. I think now it's like the Ford Theater or something, but yeah, it was, yeah, at the time it was the Oriental Theater. So, I mean, whatever that means with Mamma Mia and Asians, I have no idea.
But your cast wasn't all Asian, right?
No, it wasn't.
They weren't cracking Filipino jokes.
And I may have been the only male in the audience. No, it was funny, though. So that's actually not true. But
yeah.
I remember it was like, I was probably outnumbered 100 to 1 though, serious.
Really?
And I remember looking across, like all, the whole theater is women, right?
Uh-huh.
And I remember looking across the theater and me and like the only other guy that I was able to make eye contact with, you know, like looks my direction and we both look at each other and we have the nod like, yep.
The nod from across the way.
Yeah, like, and he's like, you know, 100 seats over or something and we both have the confirming nod like, you too, huh? No, it was good though. I mean, I'm not gonna bash it or anything. It was It was really good. I enjoyed it. I mean, I like ABBA, what, you know, the Swedish super group.
Agneta, Bjorn, Benny, and Annifrid.
Yeah. The songs, you know, they carry you through and it's,
of course.
You know, it's funny, it's humorous, it's a good story, you know. How'd the beer finish out?
The beer is good, man. Wow, there's like sediment in the bottom of my glass.
Hmm. Is that good or bad?
Indifferent. Oh.
All right. Don't kid yourself. Almost any time Jim is jamming out, he throws some ABBA in there, okay? He loves that shit.
Oh, man. She got me. She called me out. No, the beer finished good. It was nice and smooth. Yeah. I mean, it was overall, I mean, I would buy it again. That was a nice, easy drinking. One is enough. I mean,
yeah.
Yeah. You don't need two of them. You know, two of them, you'd be just be like, you would have that like cotton mouth, like smack your lips drunk
too much
guy, you know, but one's great. Yeah, it was great. How about you?
I loved it. It was, the heat was, I was worried because it says sweet and heat, but the heat overpowers the sweet. And
what's,
I think
the
I
heat?
Like I like the balance. The habaneros.
Oh, habanero. What?
It has habaneros in it. Yeah.
Wow.
So the habaneros, you know, at the end, it's kind of a little bit overpowering, but at the beginning, it's crisp and it's kind of balanced. But I think, you know, if you just, by the time you're finishing off a 22, it doesn't matter if it's too hot.
You don't, I'll say you don't even care. Exactly. All right, Ted. Well, let me get going so I can get this thing edited.
All right.
I got a short window.
All right. Have a good night.
All right, man. You too. We'll talk.
See ya.
Next week, join Jim and Ted as they disarm another Hollywood bomb or marketing masterpiece. Remember, the Holy Trinity of podcasting. Subscribe, like, share.
Special thanks to Jeremy Kent Jackson for the voiceover and Rahelio for the music.